Good evening and welcome to our village board meeting on January 11th. It's 7:03. If I can ask the clerk to please take the roll call.
Trustee Bachner.
Here.
Trustee Kargi. Trustee Vasquez.
Here.
Trustee Brennan.
Here.
Trustee Hennick. Trustee O'Connell?
Here.
President Aducey?
Here. And I just want to let you know that Tom called me, Trustee Kargi, and he has an issue, a personal issue that he's working with, so that he will join when he can, he said. So if I can ask maybe everyone to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So we have two comments, public comments, Margie and Johan. So I'll go ahead and ask if you want to speak on A to B.
Is that the stormwater management plan?
Yes, that's the stormwater master plan, yes.
Yes, I'd be happy to speak. Would you like me to go ahead?
Yes, please, Margie.
Okay, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to make public comments tonight. I'm going to speak just on that stormwater management plan. I appreciate Mr. Loester adding the river flooding to the RFP. The area impacted by river flooding, however, goes way beyond the very few properties being directly affected by overland flooding from the Des Plaines River. That's from board packet page 302 under project specs. A high water table often accompanies river flooding, which floods lower elevations, lower levels of residential and commercial property and basements, thereby impacting many more properties than is visible during overland river flooding. At a minimum, the RFP should also include river/overland flooding on public and private properties along Chicago, Thatcher, and Keystone Avenues, and not be limited to, quote, west of Thatcher. Properties along portions of these streets flooded during some or all of the Des Plaines River flood events. The RFP still omits an evaluation of the impact to downstream river forest properties from the Northside Stormwater Management Project, the discharge at Greenfield Avenue into the Des Plaines River. This is needed even more after the March 2019 upward revisions in rainfall forecasts. Included in the RFP is an evaluation of the municipal codes for stormwater detention and release, thank you, but not for grading and regrading. The municipal codes for release should consider the impact to adjacent property and should also include release from recreational use such as ice rinks and pools. Lastly, residents need to be made aware of phase two of the Northside Stormwater Management Plan, its details, its costs, and the status. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Margie. Johan? Johan? I know you look like you have us on mute. Can you hear us, Johan? Okay. I don't know if anybody's got his number. There you go. Hello? Johan, you go ahead. It's your turn now, please. Okay. I don't know if he knows. Johan, can you hear us? I don't know if he can hear us. Okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to send him a message now.
Okay. Can't hear him. Yeah.
He's got the double mute going.
a double mute? What's that?
He's muting something on his computer and then muting on his phone and then muting the computer.
Okay.
I'm not getting, I'm messaging him, but I'm not getting a response.
Okay.
Yet.
I think he's trying
to
talk.
Yeah.
I know some of you have maybe Johan's number, phone number. You can give him a call. I do not have it.
I just called him, but he's having some trouble.
Okay.
Maybe we can suggest, I don't know if he can hear us, that he call in to the, rather than do video.
Ms. Shiner's texting him through the chat, so we're giving him those options.
Yeah. I'm sending him the phone number and the meeting ID as well, so that's got it, but it'll all be in the chat feature on Zoom.
Okay, so why don't we give we'll pick up Johan when he can call in. We'll make sure we hear him and we make sure that we get his comments on 8B, the stormwater. So, all right. So with that, I'll go ahead and ask for elected official comments and announcements. Perhaps we can start with Erica. Do you mind, Erica?
Not at all. Thanks, and I'd like to start off with a land acknowledgement. As we begin, we are mindful that we hold these meetings on land that was once and still is inhabited by Indigenous people, including the Ojibwa, the Chippewa, the Menominee, the Potawatomi nations, and more. And we will remember our nation's history and honor the Native people as stewards of this land that was colonized, and that River Forest continues to be a place many people from diverse backgrounds live and gather. Just wanna thank everyone who's on our call this evening and today. Working through what my comments today were going to be was pretty tough. And I think I shared that with some people. The extraordinary events of the past week and quite frankly, the past year, do not seem to disperse or give way. And so as I was watching what was going on last week, I couldn't help but think about that capital and how it is a space that is meant for people to gather. That was it by design. And how in River Forest, we have our village hall and it is meant to do the same thing. And we have, we've had such wonderful moments in that village hall. Yeah. And to think about all the people who work there day in and day out. And you know, I just want to thank every single one of you on my behalf and behalf of the community. We know, you know, what you put yourselves in front of every day, you know, that possibility, but you do it in service to our community, to making sure that things get done and that we are better for it. So thank you. I'd also just like to acknowledge that the white supremacy, the domestic terrorism that was on display was, it continues to be too much to view. And I feel like I need to acknowledge the hurt of my community, of the Latinx community, of brown communities, of the Black community, of the people who have been reaching out to me over the course of this week, asking me, is this our America? Is this our Oak Park? Is this our River Forest? We've had a couple of incidents now in River Forest, right? With slurs at people's properties, with harassment at our retail shops. And it continued again in Oak Park last week. And there's just so much pain that goes, that is from that. And it's hard sometimes to be able to understand what to do with it. And the words of Rashida Graham Washington rang through me last week and helped clarify that we are, those around this table are put in a position where we can directly affect and make change for the better towards those things. You know, it is incredibly awful to have to see and watch those images, to have to, you know, hear from our Jewish community as well, who had to, on a national level, see the slanders of 6 million were not enough. We need to really do everything that we can to make sure that the spaces that we do live in, that we can change and that we can make an impact, that we are doing those things. And so, and I am proud to be a part of this community, but it makes me sad to have to acknowledge residents who have that pain and friends who have that pain and have to see this happen. We need to be able to ask ourselves, how did we contribute to this? It looked like outsiders, but it was us. So each one of us should ask, how did we contribute to that? And how can we make it better? And often you guys hear me talk about amplifying voices, and it's not to pit each other against one another. It's to raise those voices that aren't heard, to provide power to those who don't have it in the room. And yet there were also a couple of things that have happened between, you know, the past months that gave me joy as well. Work like the toy drive that happened in River Forest, with River Forest's help, with Maywood and other townships and villages. And we did some good work there. Knowledge around the partnerships that we have created around the Twin Village Covenant and our work with Dominican, both of which I'm extremely excited about. We have a National Day of Healing that's going to be happening on January 19th. And Dominican is part of that through their center, the Truth Reconciliation Healing Center. And I encourage everyone to participate in that. But I have trouble with the word heal sometimes, because what do we heal from? If we do not continue to make changes and do better, there's no healing for these communities to have. So I think that is the extent of my comments today. I do want to also just say in advance, happy King's Day next week. And yeah, I'll stop there.
Thank you. I have a little internet problem here. Thank you. Erica, I'd ask Trustee Vasquez, please, next.
Yes, thank you, and good evening, everyone. Trustee Bochner, you said your comments very well. I know you were kind enough. I wasn't able to personally attend the live cafe, but I asked you if I can sneak in. You were doing the Facebook live screening. So thank you for sharing that with me, and I'm sure with others as well. I'm also saddened by everything that's been going on. I'm not going to spend as much time because I think you pretty much said it quite well, Erica. But I will like to add to the fact that on my part, I do think that a call to action will be continuing our efforts. I am not going to de-minimize the bad things that have happened, even in Oak Park recently, not too long ago, Jewel in River Forest. I think we ought to focus on what we can do. I think you said it well. What can we do to improve it? I do think that what we're looking at in terms of our efforts at Dominican, as well as another advisory committee that you're working on, but focusing our efforts on what we can do and try to improve, at least at minimum only because we have more control of the minimum local area, River Forest, possibly with Oak Park, Maywood, and our neighboring villages, but focusing on what exactly the improvements, listening to each other. Healing is a phase, types of phase. I know what you're saying. We're not going to be totally healed, but if we can start our cleaning our wounds, adding some medication and treatment, maybe we'll eventually get to the point of fully being healed. At least I'm trying to be objective and optimistic about that, and looking towards working on that. So I'm working with everybody here as well, because I'm sure we're all on the same page in doing that. So thank you for that. Again, brace ourselves, because I'm hearing, I'm sure you're seeing in the news about potentially more attacks now that the inauguration is coming around the corner. Hopefully, as the federal government, we'll have a little more control on that. But we can just do our part here. I don't want to, not that it doesn't deserve it, but I can talk the whole meeting on these type of issues. So thank you. But I do have two other points I want to report on. I know Kathy and I had attended the Metropolitan Mayor's Caucus on Age-Friendly Communities Collaborative on December the 3rd, 2020. In that meeting, the topic was more on community engagement and what municipalities can do to engage their seniors. We had a presentation from the Glencoe and from the Elgin Borden Public Library District. They both were describing their efforts in Dementia Friendly. I'm happy to say, we're sort of ahead of the curve on that with the work that has been done here. I'd like to thank Lydia Manning. I'm not even sure if she's on the line, because I know she was a quite co-chair on that issue. Another effort that we talked about is for community engagement is the actual development and process of a survey for our needs assessments, which I thought would be quite helpful. And what our ad hoc committee is doing, we saw a presentation for Woodstock and then one from Arlington Heights, who is working with Northern Illinois University. So we were able to get what they've done, their ideas. I know our committee met as well, which leads me then to my next topic. When our age-friendly committee met on December the 8th, we actually talked about the survey. We looked at other samples besides the two that we heard about from the mayor, MMC, and actually what our next step is that we're now going to focus on what topics or what issues we really want to focus on for River Forest. And we're going to be talking about what those main points would be, or suggesting among our committee who what those main points should be at our upcoming meeting this Wednesday. In addition, our committee talked about, we are actually have a in the development of a website regarding dementia friendly, not only the activities, but resources, information of where we're at, so that not only our village residents, but anybody, even from Oak Park and other neighboring villages, can look to see what our efforts have been and what available resources there are for dementia friendly people and efforts. And so more to come with that. The last thing is, I'm just gonna mention it now, but I'd like to talk a little more when we get to that, that agenda item regarding the handyman program. I know that was discussed at the MMC, the Age Friendly Collaborative, but also since then, I know Oak Park took the lead on that handyman program, and but we'll talk later when we get to that agenda item, if that's okay. So thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you, Red. Kathleen, anything? Yes.
Just briefly, I wanted to echo Trustee Bachner's and Trustee Vasquez's comments, express my gratitude to our village staff and all the commissioners and everyone that participates in making the community we live in a place where we can grow and change and learn and challenge ourselves and question ourselves and look for ways to improve. I think that can be unfortunately unique. I wish it weren't, but I think it is. And then also I would just like to remind people, as I know we're getting excited about the vaccine and hopefully we are going to have some more freedom in our lives, but to please you be extra careful, because this is a tough time of year to for our seniors and everyone in the community to use all their safety precautions and with regards to COVID.
Yeah, thank you. Point. Okay, Katie?
Yeah, thanks. I too want to echo the comments from Erica and Rez and Kathleen. I won't repeat them, but I think Erica, you said it perfectly and expressed a lot of the pain and feelings and fear and concern that we've all been feeling over the past year or so, but especially in the past week, nationally and locally. And I want to take this opportunity to also, to that point, I guess, check in on the status of the mission and purpose documents for the Equitable River Forest Advocacy Group. At our last meeting, this board decided to move forward with that. And Trustee Bachner and I worked to provide some comments and input last week to President Aducci and Eric and Lisa. This has been a tumultuous month, and it's even more important that the village continue to show its commitment to this important initiative. So maybe when I'm done with my comments, you know, Kathy and Eric or Lisa can fill us in. I don't want us to lose the opportunity to continue to make forward progress here. And this was, I think, going to be or intended to be on our agenda this meeting, but I understand now it's going to be on the next meeting, but maybe you can fill us in on some of the details when we're done with the comments. Two other comments that I wanted to make. One is that I attended the Planet Green annual leaders meeting last month. It was hosted by the OPRF Community Foundation, as it is every year. They talked about progress being made by both of the Oak Park and River Forest community on sustainability issues. I was particularly impressed by the students. Maddie Howe, a senior at OPRF, who represented It's Our Future, spoke. And I noted that we have a River Forest OPRF senior who wrote an article in the newspaper last month also, along with and published a poster, one of several posters that I guess she has prepared about sustainability issues and ways to improve the world. And I'm sincerely hoping that our Sustainability Commission will contact these students and find a way to work with them especially this poster project that Emma Meister Bresnahan has done, looks like a natural and easy way for us to publicize and help educate residents about sustainable practices. And then my last comment is that I set up and had a ComEd free home energy assessment last month, which I recommend everyone do if you can. Both NICOR and ComEd offer them. This was my second one. The first one I had was maybe about 2 or 3 years ago, and it took about 4 hours as the representative went all through my house, changing out inefficient light bulbs for LEDs, changing out faucets, looking at my water heater and the pipes for insulation, installing surge protectors. I mean, you name it. And all of this is, much of it is basically free. I think there's a charge for things like programmable thermostats, but it's a fabulous program that, you know, we get it for free, but our energy bills are paying for it. So take advantage of it. And I urge you to call now, either to NICOR or ComEd. You're not gonna get an appointment in the next day, so plan ahead. It'll take a few months to actually get a date on the calendar. And this second assessment that I had went much quicker. It was probably less than an hour because much of the work had already been done at my first assessment several years ago. And the representative who came was masked and socially distant. I felt very safe and comfortable with that in light of the pandemic. Okay, that's all I have to say.
So let me address your question about the internal advisory group. And Eric and I had a very nice chat this today regarding timing. And I think we're in agreement with the timing of bringing it back to the board, which will be next board meeting. I think I was going to say this in my remarks, but I might as well say it now. The Dominican University passed kind of their portion of the partnership on with us. So I think we're making really great progress in moving forward with the working groups with Dominican University. And we'll mention a little bit later on the Truth and Racial Healing and Transformation Day on January 19th. So I'm very excited about the committee and its composition and its missions and goals. And I think we'll have a very good conversation next board meeting on it. So yeah, so we need to bring all this to action. And I think through the Maywood Covenant, the Dominican Partnership, and now the internal advisory group, I think we've made huge progress and action regarding equity and inclusion and diversity in our community. So Patty?
Yes, thank you. Good evening to everybody. I have to admit, it's been a funny start to this year, so it's always somewhat funny to say Happy New Year to everyone since it's been a rough start. So I know a lot of people aren't necessarily feeling so happy, but I do think it's a hopeful start in terms of thinking about the things that we can be working towards in this next year and making really important changes. I want to echo what my fellow colleagues said in terms of their comments, specifically around events that happen nationally and locally. It's a lot to process, and it's concerning for so many in our communities that these things continue to happen. These signs of outwardly racism that obviously reminds us that it's there. And why it's important to Trustee Brennan's point in terms of ensuring that we really continue to move forward on our actions and really taking actions is that all of us need to really think about as Trustee Buckner said in her comments as well, what our role is in all of this in terms of really making true impactful changes. And where have we allowed some of this to continue, and where we can take an active role in making changes? Because the thing with racism is that it doesn't always show itself in the form of a brick, right? Or in the form of a cup tossed with some racial slur. Unfortunately, it's at times more dangerous and hurtful for the invisible racism that happens. And so, in my opinion, the importance of this committee that we're talking about is to help facilitate the conversations around how do we identify what policies or things that we are doing, actions that we are doing, things that we are saying that perhaps perpetuate some of this racism that is still being experienced. And I think it's important for us to keep this in the forefront and always be looking through that lens of how we're evaluating things. And so I would echo that. I think it's very important that we move forward with this committee. I must admit, I am disappointed that it's really taken us this long to get to this point, to even be moving forward, in all honesty. I feel like we've had multiple meetings where the conversation was very similar. And so I really will push that we continue these conversations in all areas in order to really make some impactful changes around the area of equity and inclusion. And but the other thing I want to tie in terms of the comments around at the national level, what our elected officials were subjected to, right? And the things that they had to experience. I wanna bring it more local in that we have an election season ahead of us, right? And on one hand, that's a very exciting thing. It's gonna be a great show of democracy in our community. I'm excited and impressed that we have 12 residents willing to step up and put themselves out there on behalf of the rest of the community, which is very impressive. And so I guess I would like to put out to encourage all residents as we're going through this process, because it's hard, right? It's hard to put yourself out there as a candidate. It's hard to put yourself out there as a public supporter of candidates. And so in light of all the various conversations and high emotions, I would like to really encourage residents to take the time to learn the issues for our various boards, take the time to learn about all of our candidates, and to think about what they are trying to bring for our community, right? And keep it on a positive, constructive level, that we don't take it personal, that we're not, you know, having conversations that are knocking people down. You know, we can have differences about things, but that we can be as respectful and positive as we can with each of the candidates, with supporters of those candidates, right? I mean, that's going to be a very important thing, because we don't want to discourage people to run for our boards and take an active role in our democratic process. And so it's going to take all of us collectively to ensure that that's what we want for our community moving forward, and hopefully even at higher levels beyond that. As another side piece in terms of our election, as long as we're talking election and the fact that we just redid some things with our sign ordinance, because we have so many candidates and new candidates who aren't really familiar with some of our codes, I do want to remind people in terms of yard signs that they are not to be put on the parkway. So if candidates can keep that in mind, and as they're working with their teams to remind people when yard signs are getting out that they should not be placed on the parkway, we want to keep that area open for visibility and things with traffic. The other thing I didn't know if we wanted to talk about with our last sign code adjustments in there, particularly again around the yard signs, I believe we were saying that there is a limit to 4 yard signs. And again, with 12 candidates running, and I just think I'm not sure people are necessarily thinking about that. I'm not sure how that would even necessarily be enforced, but just to be mindful in terms of, there's a lot of candidates, there's likely a lot of people that are gonna have yard signs. We want people to learn and get to know about all the candidates. So I don't know if anybody else has thoughts on that in terms of coming into this election. Having that number, if we're really going to be limiting it or not, where we're at with that. I don't know if anybody wants to share any thoughts with that after I, but
yeah,
anyhow.
I don't think anybody's going to enforce the limited amount of yard signs, especially during an election year. I don't think there's anybody on staff, and unless there's a complaint that comes from a resident, which we will address, but I don't think I don't think there's an intent, and I'm asking you guys. I don't think there's ever an intent to enforce if somebody wants to put 5 yard signs up for candidates, they ought to be able to do it.
Yeah, we really treat that on a reactive basis, and I think the point is to just try to limit it in general. But I'm not about to. I'm not looking to enforce this proactively.
Yeah, the only time we've had issues is with people in the right of way, and so in some cases, folks will just, an inspector will pick up the sign and move it onto the private property and move on. We have had situations in the past with banner signs, like large banner signs. Those we will tell people to take down when it's not within the code.
So. Yeah, but if it's just the H bracket, court form, or whatever you call it, chloroplast signs, we don't really get into that.
Okay, yeah, and I'm not even advocating that we should. I'm just, everyone's kind of mindful of where we're at with that. Okay, and that's it. When we get to the consent agenda, I will pull something out, but I can make comments then. So thank you.
All right. Okay, Bob?
Thank you. I was, much like Eric, I was kind of reflecting back on the last year, and I was thinking about 2 days from now, it will be 10 months since I, like many of you, have been in your offices. And I think we've done a good job of, professionally keeping the economy moving along. But one of the, I have had a couple opportunities to get out of the house, and one of them happened to be last Wednesday. And I was fortunate enough to be able to have the satellite radio on, and kind of had coverage, spent most of my day listening to the coverage of the tragedy that was occurring in Washington. And I found myself driving through some areas where, let's just say, I was not amongst like-minded people of my beliefs, and my anger just built from that. And so it's not just about Black, Brown, and Latina people. It's about Americans who believe in America and the democracy that we have. And so as I was thinking about that, and I was heading into to today, I was thinking about all the good things that we accomplished last year, the things we did. We addressed concerns of our citizens and our neighbors. I think we dealt with them in a fair and equitable way. And we may have had some conversations that people didn't like, but I think at the end of the day, we made it all better for the residents of River Forest, who, like all Americans, they're our biggest concern. And so if we kind of keep our focus on taking care of America, but more importantly, taking care of our residents, I think this year is going to be as good as last. So thanks.
Thanks, Bob. Just take this off to speak. All right, just a few things, and then we'll carry on to our business, but I did prepare a few remarks regarding this past Wednesday. So our country witnessed an event last Wednesday that we have not seen in modern times. This insurrection temporarily stopped the constitutional process of certifying the next president and vice president of the United States. So as village president, I am disappointed in what happened, and I hope every person who cherishes democracy and the rule of law does the same. We all have questions. We all wonder where this will go in the days and the weeks ahead. How did it get to this point? How do we deal with this? We've lost our civility. We have lost our respect for each other's opinions and values. Both are essential hallmarks for a functioning democracy. What we need right now as a first step in fighting causeless hatred is an abundance of causeless love, radical empathy, understanding, and a shared desire to repair our broken nation. We can start our own healing here at 6 p.m. Tuesday, January 19th, the National Day of Racial Healing, will highlight the newly signed River Forest Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Resolution and honor Dominican students engaged with social justice. Alexis de Tocqueville, a 19th century French political philosopher and author of Democracy in America, penned some words that hold great relevance today. And I'm paraphrasing. The greatness of America lies not in being more enlightened than any other nation, but rather in its ability to repair the nation's faults. We must go forward with eyes wide open, even as we work for peace and understanding and for healing. And I want to emphasize that we as a board, and I'm proud, as Erica mentioned, and I'm very thankful that Erica acknowledged, and so has Rez acknowledged, that the board has done quite a bit in the area of action. We've created a covenant with Maywood. We have, again, have this partnership with Dominican that's real and functioning and exciting. And that took several months to get to, but I believe both Dominican and our community is excited for that action item. Still before us, we have to do the advisory group that we talked about, and we're committed to doing that. They're not mutually exclusive. In fact, they'll be working together. So all in all, I think I'm proud of our staff, our board, and our community for embracing change and taking action to get change done, not just talking about it. So on behalf of at least myself and the board, I thank our community for embracing real action. Second thing, I'd like to thank and congratulate Helen Kwan, who was considered Villager of the Year Villager of the Year from the Wednesday Journal for her work as the lead for the COVID-19 senior response team. I think Helen brought together a group of 100 volunteers to help our most isolated and vulnerable seniors get through a very, very hard time starting in April. She continues to work in that role as we start thinking about rolling out the vaccine. So she's been nothing but a phenomenal team player and a big part of getting through the COVID-19 pandemic. Now, talking about vaccine rollout, we have been in communication, and as part of our e-newsletter rollout, we talked about the vaccine rollout, which is really going to be administered and directed by the Cook County Department of Public Health. Currently, we are under 1A, which essentially is the healthcare workers, essential workers like firefighters, paramedics, and nursing homes. Those would be the first group that are being rolled out currently, all being administered by primarily hospitals at this point in time. The second phase, which we hope will be soon, as we hear that Governor Pritzker will be announced that we should see a big influx of vaccines soon, we'll get to the level of 1B, which is basically people 65 and older, and then other essential workers as well, and hopefully the rest of the population. So I think we're looking at the next 2 to 3, 4 months with, I think, significant rollout of the vaccine. That will be administered primarily by hospitals and partners such like CVS, Walgreens, and such. So we'll continue to update the our residents and our community about the rollout and answer questions regarding, the rollout and so forth. So keep watching for the e-newsletter because it's chock full of information. And then last, Tom wanted me to give you an update on the DEER committee. They are meeting, I guess, next week. I don't know what day that is or the week after, but he said that the purpose of that meeting will be to discuss the survey and then to talk about other non-lethal methods and report back to the board. Does that sound right? Or close to right?
Sarah's on the call. She can answer.
Oh, yeah, Sarah? Maybe. I just don't want to misrepresent what Tom said, but he's
but yeah, I mean, I would
quickly
say,
to me.
Yeah, by and large, that's close okay. enough. Yeah.
All right. So hopefully sometime in early February, we'll see a report of some type.
Yeah, I can confirm that that's what we're planning on speaking or discussing at the next meeting. It's on January 19th at 7:30.
Okay. January 19th. Okay. That's an interesting day. All right. January 19th. On Tuesday?
Oh, it's at the...
that's the date, yeah.
So the 20th or the 19th? Is the 19th? Is it?
Might want to reconsider that. I don't know when that event is scheduled to end. I know it starts at 6 p.m. We can find out what time it's scheduled to end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So that's all my remarks. So we'll go ahead with the consent agenda. So if I can get
If I could pull out the item C in the consent agenda, please.
Okay, so if we can get a motion and a second for A through AB and then D through.
So I'll make a motion to approve consent agenda items A, B, and then D through L.
Second.
Okay. Any comments or questions regarding those items?
I do have one. I actually do have one question. I don't know. I can't tell if Chief Bowman is on. I know in his report, I believe it was the November section, there was mention that he had attended a webinar in terms of perhaps funding available for the loss in ambulance fees since the pandemic, and I didn't know if there was a figure in terms of what that the losses were and the potential for having those given back through this grant.
The loss of fees or the inability to get reimbursed, is that the same? Is that what you're asking?
Right.
Patty?
Yes.
What's right?
Both. That,
the loss of
the, yeah, the loss of the fees. There was a mention of the loss of ambulance fees and then getting reimbursement, having funds available for that, unless I'm misunderstanding what that.
Yeah. The only time I know we have issues is.
Yeah, basically.
Oh, Kurt, okay, go. I'm sorry, Kurt, I didn't see you. Go ahead, Kurt.
Right. Basically, that is phase three of the CARES Act, and it was reimbursement for lost revenue.
Okay. So lost revenue in terms of reimbursement of our fee in
last year.
What?
Yeah. The revenue that we've received for ambulance fees has been down this year compared to last year. And so they reimbursed, it wasn't a lot. It was just under $5,000 that we got.
Out of the CARES Act.
Yes.
Okay.
That's what I
want
to clarify.
Thanks for answering. Yeah, all right. Any other questions? Hearing that, I'd ask the clerk to read the items and then take the vote.
Consent agenda item A, Village Board of Trustees meeting minutes November 30th, 2020. B, Village Board of Trustees executive session meeting minutes November 30th, 2020. D, agreement with the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District for the access to geographic information systems data through the Municipal GIS Partners Consortium. E, amendment to section 3-3-1 of the Village Code regarding plumbing contractors licenses ordinance. F, monthly department reports. G, performance measurement report. H, accounts payable November 2020. $2,289,001.36. I, accounts payable December 2020, $1,361,413.25. J, monthly financial report November 2020, K, Monthly Financial Report, December 2020. L, Village Administrator's Report. Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, very good. Okay, can I get a motion for item C and a second?
I move we approve the consent agenda item 5C.
Second.
Okay, so if I may explain why I pulled this out. So in our previous meetings, I had raised concern about perhaps spending the full, doing the full plan of this bike plan. I first want to start with saying, though, that again, I want to reiterate it. I said in previous meetings, I very much support advocating biking in the community, making it as safe as possible, encouraging residents to bike as often as possible. I appreciate the work that went into creating the bike plan when we worked on our comprehensive plan. But as I had said in previous meetings, I was concerned with spending money on a plan like this during a time where we're really not sure where finances are all going to shake out, right? I mean, we started with the plan at a time when we weren't in the middle of a pandemic and having concerns about finances. And even initially, some of it, conversations before we even made the decision to go with the flat levy. Later in our agenda, we have concerns with one of our business owners in terms of finances. And so I feel like looking at things holistically and really being mindful of how we're having expenditures and how we're making these decisions more holistically, and recognizing that the bike plan was presented in a way that allowed for near-term, mid-term, and long-term plans. And what I had hoped for after our very first discussion, I hoped with our second discussion that we were going to get a breakdown of costs in regards to each phased plan, each phased piece of the plan, right? And being able to make a decision that way. And I appreciate that we were given a grant, which is part of what moved some of this forward, that Commissioner Silvestri was able to get $30,000. And so there were questions around using that money. And was it possible to use that money and not necessarily more at this time, or using part of it, again, depending on what the costs were for each phase, right? And so I just personally don't necessarily feel comfortable spending the full, knowing that the plan was drafted in a way to be able to do it in phases, depending on costs, most especially, and not ever being able to see a breakdown of each part of the phase to be able to prioritize spending. I wanted to be able to stick to my concerns with the plan and where I maybe fell. And I recognize that there was consensus with the board to perhaps move forward. I just personally would have preferred the option of looking at this in a different way, and being more mindful of our spending at a time that, you know, having funds available to perhaps think about how we are supporting our small businesses and things like that. So being mindful of our spending that way. And so this particular plan, I think we could have done pieces to it and to address some of the concerns that folks in the biking community might have. But I don't think we needed to go to the extent of this full plan at this time when we have such an unknown with our finances. So I don't know if anybody else has any other comments or if people just want to go and vote, but I just wanted an opportunity to vote separately out of the consent agenda.
Yeah, I have a comment. So I'm trying to understand how much how much of a breakdown, what a breakdown looks like. So does a breakdown look like, I'm sorry, because I'm trying to look at from John Anderson's packet and everything like that. Are you suggesting that we do half the village at 1 year and half the village the second year? I'm trying to understand what kind of breakdown you're looking for, number one. And then number two, if I can go back again, I think the reference that you make to the last item on the agenda is a courtesy to a small business person. I don't think anyone suggested that that business person is in trouble. So it was a courtesy to them. And number
three, I wasn't saying that, so please don't, that's not what I was saying.
Well, that's I think I heard, okay. And number three, again, we've gone through a budget recently, and to date, Rosie has not told us that we have issues. And so, you know, so again, I don't understand again, you know, it's not gonna get any cheaper to do this next year. So, you know, I don't understand the looking for breakdowns, and I'd like to move this one off the table and get everybody to vote. Let's get the bike path work done.
So if I can just offer for you, Bob, so when I'm talking about phases, I don't know if you've had a chance to read the comp plan that the bike commission came out with. There were three specific phases with a time frame of when they can be implemented. And again, it was based on as funds were available. So it wasn't necessarily a matter of half the town or, and then the other half. There were specific phases and specific things that could be implemented. That's the bike plan. That was what came out. I'm not the one necessarily introducing the phases. It was presented in phases. We're choosing to do it all at once. And so the breakdown would have been what each phase would have potentially cost us in terms of the implementation. And so I was just advocating that we go that route and perhaps be more conservative in our spending right now with things being unknown moving forward still. So that's all I've said it before. I just wanted the opportunity to be able to reiterate my concerns. So that's fine if that's where your position is, Bob.
And if I can just say, I think we all know that biking has increased greatly during the pandemic within the village. The bike shops have been sold out of bikes. The secondhand market for bikes has gone gangbusters. And our bike shops have been deemed to be essential businesses during the pandemic. So I consider the work that's being done under this plan, including the pavement marking and the signs, to be a safety issue. And I encourage us to continue and vote.
Yeah, I agree with you, Katie. And I mean, I know it asked Eric to talk about the comp plan and the money. I mean, we know where the money's coming from. If we don't have an issue. But go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, no, I would just say, just to remind the board that this is being paid for out of our capital improvement fund. So we separate, obviously, our operational costs and our capital costs. And so there were a couple things that we have pulled back on capital expenditures. You will see when Lisa leads the discussion in 2 weeks from tonight about next year's capital plan, there's a full plan in place, but a lot of it's going to be contingent on funding because the source of that funding currently isn't being held up as we were changing vendors for the automated traffic enforcement system. That all being said, we still had to earmark some dollars in capital to pay for this expense because this was identified as a goal and a priority. And so, you know, this the funding is available. We have the funding, and it is separate from the discussions we're having on the operational side. And the village staff just certainly at the discretion of a policy decision for the board, which we understand and respect, but we wouldn't put forward, please understand, we would not put forward a recommendation like this if the funding wasn't available.
Yeah, I understand that. I mean, that's why we go through these vetting processes and have these discussions and talk through these issues so that we would never come to a spot where we would be looking at a piece of either whether an ordinance or a bill that wouldn't be appropriately funded now or in the future. So is there any further questions regarding this particular item? If not, I'd ask the clerk to please read the item A. What do we got now here? C?
Excuse me, 5C. 5C, award of bid and contract to Superior Road Striping, Inc. in the amount of $131,410.74 for the bicycle sign and pavement marking project. Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
No.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Motion passed.
Okay, very good. Let's go on to the consent items for separate consideration. If I get a trustee to move and second, and another one to second 6A.
I move we approve payment from the general fund to McDonald's Carabidus for $208.46.
Second.
Second.
I would ask the clerk not call my name because of my relationship with the franchisee, please.
Okay, very good. Yep. Any question, comment on this? I'd ask then the clerk to please read the item and then take the vote.
November and December accounts payable from the general fund to McDonald's Caravides for $208.46. Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Motion.
Okay. Okay, so item number seven, we have a recommendation from board and commission. If I can get a, go ahead. A motion and a second on item 7A.
I move to enter into an intergovernmental agreement with the Village of Oak Park and the Oak Park and River Forest Townships for a home repair program partnership.
Second.
Can I hear a second? Okay.
Second.
All right. I know, Raz, you talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
I know I see Pam is on and Carla from the township where we're partnering with. So we're real excited about this program.
Sure, Kathy, if I can just start off maybe. What I would like is in the spirit of our committee and our village in terms of trying to assist our senior residents, this was just another project that came forth. I know and Pamela Mann and Robin Sands is online as well if there's any additional questions, but Pam and Robin came to our ad hoc age friendly committee meeting at the last meeting, and they presented was a nice program which would help our seniors. It's I'll refer to it as the handy person repair program. And basically it is to offer our seniors, meaning eligible seniors of 60 years and above. It's based on a sliding scale for minor repairs. They're not major, no construction, they're minor repairs, also non-emergency repairs. The fees are based on sliding scale of income of what our residents can afford. And I know the materials will spell out that the board received, will spell out the types of work that are available under this program. It is in conjunction working with the Northwest Housing Partnership. It's a non-for-profit that focuses on the promotion of cost-effective quality for low housing individuals as well as seniors. So. And the intent of this project would be focused to working with our local businesses, and I'm not saying reserved only for River Forest, but Oak Park, Forest Park, et cetera, around our areas. And also, hopefully, they'll be dementia-friendly trained. If not, we're going to be insisting on that as well. And we already started that. I know River Forest had already started with our Dementia Friendly Working Group, reaching out to and making or assisting our businesses to become dementia friendly. I understand Oak Park is in that process too, or working towards that process as well. So it's a good effort from both of us and both of the villages in working on that. Again, our participation would be promoting, trying to make referrals towards this program. The cost to us is $1,750, which is, I say, a small investment to help our seniors in the village, and to also start a program that works not only for our village, but we're working in conjunction with the village of Oak Park, as well as both townships. And we're gonna try to see if we can expand it. And I know Oak Park has already been working in discussions with Provisor Township. So Maywood and I'm not Forest Park, I'm not sure they're part of Proviso. So they'll be having discussions that they have their program. And so we're going to try to see if we can maybe combine the programs or try to work together so that all the villages can benefit from this. So unless there's any other questions, I'm happy to answer questions, as well as Pam, who's online, and Robin. So I hope you'll support.
Yeah, I did have a question about the dementia-friendly training. I was hoping that maybe you could talk a little bit more about that and what that looks like and who provides it to the vendors.
Well, the dementia-friendly that we have is from our dementia-friendly River Forest group that we've done. So it's Lynn Manning and some other volunteers that have been trained and also, I know our police officers, as well as our firemen, have gone through the dementia-friendly training, and so they are quite familiar with it. We have our members of the dementia-friendly River Forest group have been the ones who have been trained are now they're called ambassadors. So they're going out to our River Forest businesses. To make them aware, not make them, to work with them, to help them become more aware of dementia-friendly efforts, et cetera. And so our businesses have been quite receptive to that. And I know Oak Park probably has something similar, that they will reach out to their businesses as well and becoming dementia-friendly and having them become more aware and dementia-friendly. So that's how it's done. Specifically, the training, as I understand it, is that our trainers, they actually put, it's not just a class that you listen, read, they actually put you in scenarios of a dementia-friendly person scenario, so that our people taking the training, well, actually, it's like a job, on the job type of scenario, where they have to deal with a dementia-friendly situation. And they find it really beneficial, other than, it's better than just reading about it and answering questions on an exam. So they're live scenarios and they're interactive scenarios.
Yeah. So. I don't know, Jim O'Shea? I don't know, is there anything you wanna add to the dementia-friendly training that I know some of your officers have received?
They actually all received it. The dementia live training, I went through it and it was an eye opener. And officers still talk about it today when they've had to respond to calls and they were able to recognize maybe what someone was going through. And the instructors were a big part of the success of the training, being brought in not just for the police, but the fire personnel. But not much more to add, except that it definitely added value to the services we can offer to our community.
And Erica, if I may add, one other indirect benefit of the training is that our officers actually, it helps to not only deal with people dementia friendly, but also recognizing some other mental disabilities that make them a little aware and become more patient, dealing with individuals who, for example, may have been stopped and questioned, and their better understanding about how to deal with someone who may have some disability issue. So they may not necessarily be dementia friendly. They may be able to deal with some other mental disabilities.
Understood. The state of Illinois has specific training around that too as well, Jim, right? To get certified in mental health training, I think.
Yes, Erica, there's training that's mandated every year or two. That's part of some of the new mandates that the Illinois Law Enforcement Training and Standards Board have put through, and our officers are up to date on that training also. And if
right.
I could add, if I could add, I just want to mention, because it's kind of relevant right now, is autism and some of the training our officers have gone through with regard to autism, and probably over the past, in the past week and also probably about a month or two prior to that, we've had residents reach out to us to discuss family members that had autism that walked the community, and just to sort of do an introduction. And our crime prevention officer, Ben Ransom, that all of you know, he is the liaison for those types of meetings and introduction, and he reports back, and the families have given us pictures, and there's been some positive interactions between those individuals and the officers. So really that level of where even the residents are comfortable with contacting us, knowing that we're already engaged in those that might be, whether it's on the autism or dementia, Alzheimer's, those spectrums, or just mental illness in general, it's really changing how we're able to serve the public.
Thanks for that, Jim. Yeah, and I had, I guess what I was referencing is, I think there are some police officers that get an even higher specialized training in relation to mental health. And maybe they have like a sticker or a patch on their uniform because of it.
Yes, Erica, that's CIT training you're referring to. And there's a good number of our officers that are trained in CIT, probably what's holding back the ability to have the rest of us, including supervisory and command staff, has probably been COVID. It is a 40-hour certification class, and we're hoping the state offers more of those coming up as we're starting to move out of COVID, so we can say that 100% of our personnel have been trained in that area. And they do wear the pins, Erica. You're correct in that.
But I do want to make clear that just so that this service is not limited, it's open to all of our seniors. And I just want to be clear on that. I know we're talking about dementia friendly, but it's not just limited to our seniors who may have some dementia friendly issues. It's open to all our seniors.
Thank you, Rick. Okay, any further questions regarding 7A? Hearing none, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee Hennick?
Hear me?
Yeah, Trustee Hennick?
Yes.
Thank you. Trustee O'Connell?
Nice job, Rez. Yes, Kathleen.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Before, but also thanking Robin and Pam, as well as Carlos, not online, but Carlos.
Yes, Carla.
Oh, is she? Carla? I'm so sorry, Carla. I didn't see your box, so I apologize. So
thank you so much.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you were just listed as community room, so I apologize for that. So Carla, I want to thank her, as well as my fellow committee members as well. So thank you all, and yes for me, and thank you, Board.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Motion passed. Great. Yeah, thank you, Rez. What a great program, and I think a great program for our seniors and for our town. So thank you so much.
Okay, we're going on to item 8A. If I can get a trustee to move and second, we can talk about the variance. 8A. Didn't I say 8A?
Okay. I move we approve an ordinance granting fence height variations for properties at 803, 811, 815, 821, 825, 831 Bonnie Gray Place.
Second.
Okay.
So this is a follow-up from the last meeting when we had discussion about granting the residents along Bonnie Bray the ability to put up a 12-foot fence. The general consensus of the board was to proceed, but also provide some sort of notice to the residents within the 250-feet radius, which we did. There were two comments that were sent forward, and we've sent those off to the board. So provided that you're still in agreement with this decision, this ordinance is before you tonight for approval.
Hey, Eric, I have two things. One from Tom, who called me right before the meeting. He was of the, he thought that we were going to follow the same rules as for zoning and go to 500 feet. And so he was a little concerned that we were only doing 250. And then question I have
so
is,
can I,
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say the rules are different for, correct me if I'm wrong, Lisa, for the variations. It's 250 for zoning and then 500 for plan development.
That's correct.
Okay.
So we did follow the rule.
Okay. I will pass that along to him. And then my question is, reading this, is will the residents in those addresses, if they want to put up a fence, they're putting up a 12-foot high fence. They're not putting up some 6, some 8, some 10, some 12.
They would all have the ability to go to up to 12. If theoretically, if they wanted to individually go to different heights, they could. Those neighbors have been working collectively throughout a lot of the processes that have been going out there. So I don't suspect that would happen, but theoretically they could have that ability if they wanted to.
I think that's going to look goofy, personally. I mean, you know, they've made the case, rightfully so, that they want to have protection and be blocked from the Sheraton. And so, you know, if somebody's just going to put up a 6 or an 8 foot fence, I think it kind of defeats the purpose of what their argument was at the beginning. So that would be my comment.
Well, they haven't, Trustee O'Connell, they haven't asked for that. We are proactively granting them relief in the event they decide to go on with the 12-foot fence, because that's what they had talked about previously. So keep in mind, they also have, as a matter of right, to install a fence of a certain height, whether it's 7, I have to go back and look at my first memo here,
right.
7 or 8 feet, they have that right as well. I just keep in mind, there's an 8-foot fence already that's going to be installed by the developer. So my guess would be either they're going to put up a 12-foot fence or they're not going to put up a fence at all.
Okay.
All right. Hearing no further questions on this issue, I'd ask the clerk to please take the vote.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Motion passed. Okay, good. Yeah. I think the residents will appreciate the ability to put up a 12-foot fence if they choose. Okay, so let's move on to 8B. This is the update on the stormwater master plan. No motion, just the staff is seeking some consensus to move forward with the RFQ. So.
All right. John and Jeff can walk us through the cover memo. And
also maybe talk to about what Margie had also mentioned a little bit. So I just don't want to lose what Margie had talked about.
Yep, fair enough. John, Jeff?
Sure. So as I'm sure you're all aware, you all have recently discussed the, you know, having staff move forward with the Stormwater Master Plan, started with the RFP. We spoke about, staff presented an RFP to the board a few weeks ago, and it was discussed at that time that we should go out with a couple of public meetings to solicit some resident feedback. We've since held two public meetings and incorporated the feedback that we did receive into an updated RFP. In the meantime, staff also spoke with the village attorney and kind of determined that the best route forward would be to also include an RFQ, or request for qualifications, kind of insert that into the process prior to the RFP being issued. So the documents you have before you tonight are just that, the RFQ that was developed, as well as the updated RFP based on the resident feedback that we did receive. To your point, I'm happy to walk through some of the questions that Ms. Sikander brought up this evening. First being the, or at least first on my notes, the NSMP and phase two. Obviously that's been on the village's radar for some time, kind of dependent upon funding. That is included within the scope of the RFP, but we've identified it because we are, you know, theoretically going to be identifying additional capital improvement projects. So the context changes a little bit. We still have the, you know, phase two project, but we may have other projects that are higher priority or lower priority. So it is included within the RFP, but it becomes part of a larger discussion at that point. The phase one, the outfall structure and any potential impacts that it has, I'm not sure that the stormwater master plan, you know, I don't know that that's the right context. If the village board wants to dig in to determine whether or not that is causing an adverse impact, I mean, we could certainly hire a consultant to do that. I guess my initial reaction to that would be that was part of the initial modeling that was done when the NSMP project was designed. And if that were associated with adverse impacts, the village would have, you know, accommodated that to some degree or not moved forward with the project. So, you know, that's something, again, we could look into if we wanted to. I just don't know that the stormwater master plan is the appropriate, you know, avenue to do so. The grading ordinance revisions, or the, I should say the stormwater ordinance revisions, and how it relates to grading changes. That's always something that's on my radar. The item that's included in the RFP, the scope item, is to kind of provide analysis for anything that falls under the stormwater ordinance umbrella. So that would include grading. I identified some specific elements like detention or release rate, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't also be able to look at grading grading changes if the village thought that that were important. That's, you know, I would consider that to be included within the current scope of the RFP, even though it isn't specifically identified via the word grading in there. And then the riverine flooding. So we did incorporate some language, as I had included in the memo. We did include some additional language about overland flooding associated with the river. I certainly understand that there are groundwater elements that are associated with that. The language that we incorporated into the RFP was derived from specific feedback we got. I don't recall who the resident was that brought it up, but they specifically requested that we include overland flooding, especially, you know, associated with properties west of Thatcher Avenue. So that's what I tried to incorporate in the document. That being said, the scope item that's included in the RFP is to provide analysis of overland flooding. So even if we say, especially west of Thatcher Avenue, we are still considering or requesting analysis of all overland flooding associated with the river. So that being said, I feel like the items that Ms. Sikander brought up earlier this evening are essentially included in this scope of work in the RFP. And I would also qualify that with the fact that we still have public meetings baked into the RFP process. So once we have a consultant on board, we still have opportunity to kind of refine and fine tune some of these items with a qualified consultant who would be able to speak much more intelligently about particular items and how feasible they may or may not be to study.
Hey, Jeff, would removing the terminology, especially west of Thatcher, bump, give a higher priority to the
flooded properties that Ms. Sikander is talking about, especially on Chicago, Keystone, et cetera?
We can, I mean, if there are concerns that that kind of focuses the effort too much west of Thatcher Avenue, we can certainly remove that and just kind of leave the language to discuss, you know, overland flooding associated with the village, but I don't see that being a problem.
I know from walking around the village during flooding events, Chicago Avenue is flooded. So why not address it?
Sure.
Yeah, no, great suggestion, I think.
But to be clear, Chicago Avenue floods overland from the river, stops at Thatcher. The flooding that you're talking about, Trustee Brennan, that occurs on Chicago and by Keystone and Thatcher, that's not overland flow. That's the storm sewer system being overcharged. So I just want to be clear about that. So we haven't had overland flow flooding in over 10 years.
Over there.
Anywhere. Well, you haven't the forest preserve, but nothing is coming into the residential neighborhood in that regard. So we blocked it at Chicago,
right. Right.
And the berm has worked.
Right.
Even in 2013, yeah. Lake Street flooded, but that was an overland flow. That was the storm that morning, and the heavens opened at like at 7:30 in the morning, and the storm sewer system was backed up.
Huh. Okay.
So you're saying that the flooding that I see on Chicago during a heavy rain event, that's heavier and deeper, closer to Thatcher and the Forest Preserve, that's not water coming from the Des Plaines River, that's from the sewers?
Correct. Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but that, and even in May when even Keystone, I mean, it went pretty far east at that point in the May storms, Trustee Brennan, that is not overland from the river, that's from the storm sewer being overcharged. Jeff, can you confirm that?
Well, I mean, I guess if we'd have to get pretty specific, Trustee Brennan, if we're talking about west, you know, I'm sure you've seen when operations staff construct that wall kind of on the west edge of Thatcher Avenue. Are you talking about flooding that comes up in like the Cook County Forest Preserve parking lots and on top of Chicago Avenue, a lot closer to the river there?
I'm talking about Chicago Avenue being impassable unless you have a Jeep, and people not being able to get out of their driveways, having to move their cars in advance of the rainfall because they can't get out of their driveways on Chicago Avenue.
Yeah, it's
but east of.
Oh, that's Keystone. But Katie's making a good point. It's the water with the water that comes from Chicago Avenue, and we have to bag it, you know, and or put those boulders up.
Yeah,
where is that water coming from?
Yeah, Trustee Brennan, you're talking about people who live on Chicago east of Thatcher, correct?
There really are no driveway, you know, residential drive. There are no residences on Chicago west of Thatcher because you get
correct.
Into the forest preserve at that point. So, yeah, if we're talking about residences, they're all east of Thatcher. Any of that, yeah. As Eric mentioned, we kind of block off the river from coming into town. So anything east of Thatcher would be more sewer related.
It's a bit confusing,
that's why I want to take a moment and talk about it, so people understand.
Yeah, I think it's worth it.
So you're right. West of, if we use Thatcher as the dividing line, west of Thatcher, when the Forest Reserve parking lot and all of Chicago floods, overland flow. Absolutely. We do a good job at blocking the river
at
Chicago.
I think that's
why I want to make the point just to clarify. So, and I just remember, the only reason I remember this, Kate, Trustee Brennan, is because you were texting me on Sunday night saying Chicago and Keystone is flooded.
Right.
And you were right, but it was flooded because the storm sewer system was full, not because the river had flooded to that point.
Thanks.
Okay. So I had sorry, go ahead. Were you talking, Kathy?
No, go ahead, Kathy.
So I wanted to bring up, I know it's come up in conversation a bit at our table and just in conversations I had with residents, and I know a resident brought it up at one of the stormwater, the town halls that Jeff mentioned, is again back to the issues with backyard flooding. I spoke to a resident on 600 Forest who apparently experiences very extensive backyard flooding, and he has concerns when it gets high enough that even perhaps impacting a utility pole in the back of his yard, so having some concerns there. And he has done some mitigation himself in terms of putting in a backflow, and then after that he installed a reservoir, you know, and pretty costly, $10,000 for the one and about $15,000 for the other, and yet he's still experiencing pretty extensive flooding. And part of it, he was sharing, is that where the placement of his yard is, and then grading, and the fact that his property ends up coming down a bit. So issues that seem to be at this point out of his control, right? And he's tried to do some things to solve the problem, and yet it's still there. And so he raised a suggestion, and I don't know how this would work and how, if we could do this, would be to think about the possibility of, on a case-by-case basis, for these property owners that are really having this extensive backyard flooding, if there's a way to allow release somehow for that to drain, you know, back into the sewers. And so my question would be, in terms of like modeling and what, you know, the RFP would do, is if there would be a way to simulate some of these properties being able to drain out, if they could simulate that addition of water. Does that make sense what I'm saying? Because it sounds like from hearing from residents is that we do have some situations, and I know it was mentioned that we don't necessarily know the extent of it, that it ends up being anecdotal in terms of residents who have this backyard flooding. And so my other wonderment in terms of scope of work, would it be possible after rain events to have drone footage or something done that we can, you know, without having to count on residents reporting, is there a way to assess the scope of the number of backyards? So meaning if it's only a handful, can we help those homeowners by allowing a variance for them to be able to drain their yards more easily, right? If it's a bigger problem and there's more homes that are really experiencing it, so it's a greater issue to allow that to happen, is there some way to evaluate that, is my question, with this modeling? Am I making myself clear in terms of what I'm saying? And
yeah, I think I understand what you're getting at. And I think ultimately the answer is yeah, for the right price, we could study whatever we want. But I think you brought up a good point too. I think it ultimately would depend on how many, you know, do we have 50 of these areas in town? Do we have 5 of them? My hunch would be that we're somewhere in the middle. We can study them all we want, but then to your point, ultimately, are we going to let them kind of drain back into a sewer system that we may find through this study? Well, we know already is woefully undersized. So I think that's probably a really good question to, you know, we can incorporate something in the RFP and indicate that we'd like to incorporate elements of kind of rear yard drainage on a more specific level than we may already have in the RFP. But I think that's a more easily answered question from the consultant who we would actually be pulling on board to do this work, to then say, how do we do this? We can say, yes, we can do it. Theoretically, of course we can do it. The how we do it and how we address those issues, I think, is something that a consultant would be far better qualified to answer. And again, ultimately, this study that we're doing, the entirety of the master plan and the study of the actual sewer system, that may preclude any kind of drain out systems, or they might have to be restricted to very high levels or something like that. But I think we would have to wait until a consultant is on board in order to adequately answer that question.
Yeah. Well, and I would take that a step further, Jeff. I mean, I would say, and I understand the question. The problem is, it's a completely different scope. So right now we're really focused on our utilities, our utility system, and what it should or should not be, based on the parameters and the feedback we set up with the consultant. I my personal opinion is, if you start going down the road of looking at backyard flooding, that's a whole separate scope. I mean, this study is going to get astronomical, and it's going to get into the government vortex, and it's never going to end. So that being said, I'm certainly not trying to downplay folks who have backyard flooding, but when we've dealt with private, again, as the municipality, we've really tried to focus on the public infrastructure or things that are tied to the public infrastructure. And we really haven't, we've always taken the approach because resources are finite, that people who have private property issues, that's on them.
Yeah, and we also have a process. So if somebody's having considerable backyard flooding, there's a way that I think we can even look at it on a case-by-case basis and give them advice and counsel. I mean, many times we have a front, you know, we suggest a front drain, or we have a backflow preventer program. We have, different potential options for the resident to maybe mitigate the flooding that they're having in the backyard. I don't know who the resident is, but, if it's in the backyard, it's hopefully not in his house or their house. So sometimes, when you have a big flood and it sits in the backyard, it's difficult and it's hard, but it's better there than in somebody's home. And so I think if that person is here, I would suggest, Patty, for that resident to talk to the staff, because I think that's what the process, there's a pretty robust process, I think part of our, that I've looked at. Maybe I'm wrong.
Mark from Public Works came out and visited a number of the residents and more who had issues and gave some counsel and advice. And so I think, that asset is there for our residents to use also.
Yeah, and I can talk with Eric offline. My understanding is that this particular homeowner, not to get into the weeds, but had reached out to staff. And to your point, Kathy, you're right. There are options that people have, and people have been going that route. And this particular homeowner has done two of them and yet is still experiencing some pretty extensive flooding. And so that's the concern is what, if anything, we can do for these homeowners. And if we're at a point where there are potential solutions, being able to use our public infrastructure, if there's a way to try and figure that out. And maybe we can't, right? But that's why I'm asking, if there's a way to figure out, could we come up with a potential solution through this process for some of these homeowners that are experiencing pretty extensive flooding? And his opinion is that it was out of his control, right? And so that's the other issue. It's because of other properties and the way he's situated and being lower than other properties. So anyhow, that's.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Any other comments and questions regarding the plan? So there's no vote. It sounds like, some good conversation and a consensus to move forward with a few tweaks that we talked about tonight and clarifications. Let's issue the RFP and see what we get from that industry. Okay. Look at long-term plans. Okay. I'll just answer. Johan said it's important that we look over long-term plans for state-of-the-art mitigation, even though the ones does not have the funding now. We cannot run the risk of shortchanging long-range thinking beyond the current budget. Yes, of course. In fact, this whole stormwater master plan is a 20-year plan, right? So it's not just the current.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And again, as Jeff pointed out, the findings and the information that come forward out of the study come back to the community and the board.
Right.
So there's this will be another year of discussion.
Yeah. And as budget would go, it would be something budgeted over multiple budget periods.
Yes.
Right. But you're correct. We always look broader, longer. Thank you, Johan. Okay, so hearing none. Well, the consensus, you've got the hearing nobody agreeing to it. I would think you've got your consensus.
Yep.
So we'll move on to 9A. If I get
So we're clear, then the next thing that will come back on this item in a couple months, because it's a two-step process, we have to go through a qualified selection process to get a list of contractors and then work through the proposals on that. But the next thing that would come back would be a contract to a staff recommendation on the contract.
Yes, agreed.
Okay.
Okay, 9A. So this is under new business. If I can get a motion and a second for 9A.
I move we approve a partial fee waiver for Good Earth Greenhouse of $2,000 for a total of $500 for Class 1 and Class 4B liquor licenses for 2021.
Second.
All right. Before you tonight is just fairly simple request. Good Earth Greenhouse is the only liquor license holder, restaurant holder. And so all of our other liquor licenses are either grocery stores or pharmacy / grocery stores. So they had the owner of Good Earth and myself had a conversation late last year. Essentially, they were unable to really use their restaurant portion of their liquor license and, aren't using it, quite frankly, aren't using it right now either. And hopefully, as the vaccine rolls out, that will change here in the months to come, fingers crossed. But in light of that, we're looking for some consideration. They still understand they would pay the portion of the fee related to the Class 4B license, which relates to liquors. So they will continue to do that. But as for a recommendation, again, on the restaurant portion, the Class 1, which is $2,000, staff agrees with that request and is recommending that that fee be waived for 2021 for their liquor license. So that's what's before you tonight.
Eric, I'm the one who made the motion, but I'm not sure that I'm quite clear. Are we waiving $2,000 or $500?
So the total fee would be for them in a given year, $2,500. The fee is broken into two fees. It's $2,000, the way the code's set up, it's $2,000 for the Class 1 and $500 for the Class 4B. So they'll continue to pay the 4B portion of it, and we're recommending a waiver on the $2,000 portion of it. So their total fee for 2021 would be $500.
And that's the way that the motion was presented, Trustee Brennan?
Yeah, got it, thank
you. Okay. All
right, any questions, comments on this? Hearing none, I'd ask,
oh, I've got questions.
Oh, sorry, Erica, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So for liquor licenses, Eric, could you explain if more area businesses wanted to have liquor licenses, would we offer those up?
Are you saying if more?
So let's say there's another restaurant or another retail shop that wanted a liquor license for 2021, would we be able to offer that up to them?
Oh, this consideration for a partial fee waiver?
Nope, just the liquor license.
Yeah, so the way the liquor license work, the liquor license, little liquor license 101. So the village president is the liquor license commissioner in addition to her duties as village president. So that's number one. Number two, there are a series of classifications within the code, right, for restaurants and then packaged liquor, et cetera, et cetera. And then the amount of licenses in the code per classification is also limited. So you, if someone came in and wanted to open a restaurant, let's say, and wanted a liquor license, the village staff nor the liquor commissioner could just issue that liquor license. That would come back to the village board, and you would have to approve the increase of the quantity of licenses within that classification for us to issue that license. And that's done intentionally as somewhat of a check and balance so that we control who sells liquor and who doesn't, and that it fits within the spirit and, the feeling of a community. So If a new restaurant came in tomorrow and said, hey, we want to sell liquor, we would look at that. We'd run them through the normal background checks, et cetera, et cetera. But then we would bring an ordinance to you that would increase the amount of liquor licenses within that classification. And if you approved it, then I could issue, the village staff could issue the liquor license. If you denied it, then you wouldn't. So that's kind of how that works.
And just to put a fine point on it too, we're not creating a liquor license for that specific business. The board creates the liquor license and then that business can come in and apply for it.
Correct, the availability.
So, yeah, so in theory, if there were two businesses competing for one license, we would have to address that, but you don't create it specifically for the business. You create it, then they apply.
Yeah, and in a lot of larger communities, what you'll see on consent agendas oftentimes, and Greg, correct me if I'm wrong, is sometimes the increase and the decrease of licenses. So, you know, in Oak Park, for example, businesses, you know, may be opening or closing at a more frequent rate, absent even COVID. So if one business closes and another one opens, they may have an ordinance that would just, on consent agenda, that just raises and lowers those just as a matter of normal business terms. So we just don't have that quantity here in River Forest. So.
Got it. And so I guess the reason why I asked that too is because what's being asked here essentially is for a class one and class 4B liquor license for 2021 to be at a fee of $500. So if like a restaurant like La Perita wanted, you know, saw this today and was like, wait a second, $500 liquor license, we'd love to be able to sell, you know, liquor through our store, could we get a $500 liquor license, you know, that they would be asking for that as well. And so for me, I wonder, go ahead.
That's how it would work. They would pay $500 for the package license. Yeah.
Okay. So what we're saying essentially is that, you know, instead of $2,500, that anybody else who comes in, we maybe offering it to them for $500 for 2021. And I wonder if that's the right way to go about it. It almost makes sense if we are going to talk about this to see if it's a rebate for 2020, given 2020 was the year that that is being said was tough, you know, for Good Earth Greenhouse in relation to the liquor license, or, you know, so potentially doing like a rebate for 2020 or looking at how we want to do 2021 liquor licenses and be consistent there.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends on how you want to phrase it. At the end of the day, it's going to get you to the same number.
Right, but the opportunity then is more meaningful for other businesses in the area to potentially be interested in the liquor license and work with the community for that and to stay consistent. I imagine we would be offering, you know, if they were interested in class one and class 4B liquor license, that total would be $500 instead of $2,500.
Right. I understand what you're saying. I just think practically speaking, the likelihood of that happening is probably very low. You'd have to look at our existing, our existing restaurants and then make a determination, you know, the cost of doing that is not cheap. And there's a cost of getting onboarded, all the background work, the application, the insurance, the work with the distributors, et cetera, et cetera. So your point's taken. So whether you want to consider it a rebate for 2020 or the 2020 fee, you can go either way. I don't expect an onslaught of businesses coming in and seeking a fight. I mean, if they did, I'd be happy to talk to them.
Especially
20. I sort of like the idea of the rebate because it addresses the period of time when they were not able to use the license, which was last year. We don't know what's going to happen this year. We have a hunch. So why not give the rebate for the period of time that they paid for it and couldn't use it, and then see what happens this next year?
You could do that.
Yeah, and if I could just add, I think I would agree with that approach. You know, my thinking is that we, you know, I know our ADC talked about what we can do to help all of our local businesses, small businesses, right? I know after listening to that meeting, I submitted a pretty extensive email suggesting ways that we can help our small businesses, like the business corner on the website and having the business spotlight on the newsletter and pushing our businesses out on Facebook to encourage people to shop local. And so I absolutely want to find ways that we can help support our small businesses, but I want to be sure that we're also having opportunities potentially available for other businesses that may have experienced, because of COVID, a reduction in their business, right? And their sales. And so this is an area where it's like, okay, how are we, I get that we're talking specific, that it's a liquor license and we're saying that, okay, we're not gonna have an onslaught of this request. So we feel comfortable doing it because it's more or less the one liquor license. But my thinking would be, okay, what if we have another business owner who has a fee that they feel like for whatever reason was a hardship for them because of COVID as well, how we would approach that, you know, on a case-by-case basis, and then what's the criteria to say, okay, well, we'll help this business, but we're not going to be able to waive the fee for this other business, and why would that be, you know what I mean? It's like, so again, even I had raised the point when I was seeing businesses being advertised through the Village newsletter and on Facebook, I raised the question about, okay, what are our parameters for doing that? And how do we determine which businesses get that benefit or not? And so this would be the same in terms of, if we give a relief on a fee, what are we really basing that criteria on? So that if there's another company business that comes before us, how are we going to say, okay, we'll waive your fee, right? Or not. And, you know, being realistic again with our funds, you know, these fees go towards our revenue source as well too. So how often can we, I just want to think bigger picture and, you know, recognizing that we want to be able to be advocates for all of our businesses when we can.
Just tell me. Yeah, ask me a question.
Yeah. Okay. So I think maybe the rebate makes, you know, if we go rebate, then
yeah, we can rebate the fee
I think you got to be careful by calling it a rebate, because I believe there's other businesses in town that will be able to say that they haven't been able to use portions of their facilities, and therefore they would like a rebate too. I mean, you know what, we're doing something, let's do it for this one person. And then if others want to come in and state their case, let them state their case. Because, you know, again, you know, the biggest portion of hers was her ability to serve in the facility. And, you know, basically the state has told her she can't do that. You know, she can't have people in her dining room, if you will. So I'm of the ilk to say, you know what, let's just adjust her fee and then and just wait for other people to come in.
So what I would, again, just to remind the board, again, tonight we're really just focused on the liquor license. With the exception of this business, every other liquor license is more of a grocery store or a store that, at least in my opinion, has not been impacted by the impact of COVID. Liquor license, you know, in those cases too, you know, they're making a decent amount of money off of that. In terms of, you know, the equitable component, I would say the village and the village board and the village has done a great job with that. And really, I would point back down to the property tax freeze that hits everybody as proportionately based on what they pay and what their assessed value is. So I think that in itself is a good measure. And if you recall, even last summer, we went ahead and gave people an extension to pay their business licenses, and people took advantage of that, and you know, and waited until they had the funds to do so. Most of those business licenses are a little bit smaller in nature, $25-$50 tops in most cases. The ones that do get more expensive are tied into food service, and in that case, we have legitimate costs and expenses that go to inspecting those. In fact, that's one thing I know Lisa and I have talked about,
that may come back to you at some point is re-examining those fees, because we're probably losing money on that on a regular basis. So I just want to point to all those other things to give some additional context and perspective. But certainly, if, and you all know this, if something came up and came to our attention and we saw something on a large scale affecting our business community, certainly we'd bring that to your attention with a let you know, and then with a recommendation.
So I guess that's maybe part of the question. I mean, it sounds like, Eric, in what you were talking about, you know, and what we did last year to help some businesses, those were good things. Are there even, like to Bob's point, you know, are there other businesses that were impacted in different ways that we could help and have this be more equitable? Things that we're not considering. And, you know, this particular company came to us. Others may just not really even understand that that's an opportunity that they can do, right? And so potentially, is there a way for us to be proactive in the way that we're thinking about the fees?
Yeah.
If we are going to try to be helpful.
Yeah. No, it's a fair question, but I think we have been proactive. If you go back,
right, and so I know that you talked about those couple of things, and I mean,
the good news is we don't have a lot of fees on our businesses as well. I mean, we run a pretty lean machine here. So again, to the extent we do a business, you know, a Jewel, a Whole Foods would pay a higher business license annually, isn't because they're a bigger business. It's dried. Tied directly to the fact that we need to send a health inspector out there on a semi-regular basis to make sure they're complying with the sanitation regulations. So, and that there's a cost to that for us. So we have to try to maintain that cost. So we, in a way, we kind of, you know, went through the exercise last year when we went through it. We looked at parking, we looked at business license, we looked at vehicle stickers. I mean, we had a whole bevy of items.
A lot.
Yeah, we had a lot. So not to say that we can't ever go back and look at things again, but I would just, you know, share that again with the board that I think collectively, I think we've done a good job at trying to do that. And certainly these marketing and advertising efforts are going to help in that regard as well.
Well, if I could just to Erica's point. So you're right, Eric, we were good about delaying the business, but they still had to pay it, right? It was just that it was delayed. It wasn't that we waived it. Parking meters, yes, we had waived. So that was revenue we didn't ultimately see. But even, you know, vehicle stickers, we didn't waive anybody's vehicle stickers. We just extended the time that people had to pay. And so that's sort of the difference. You know, it's one thing to give people a break in terms of when they have to pay it, but to waive it all together.
Yeah, and again, and I think when you talk about, you know, looking at this holistically, the property tax freeze is going to do that. We left $200,000 to $250,000 on the table by freezing the property tax rate this year, and that was the right thing to do, and it covers everybody, right? But you're going to go into, again, now we're talking about the operations, not the capital, but on the operational side, you're going to have some challenges coming into this year, and I know we're going to be able to tackle them. Well, not me, because I won't be here, but others, including Ms. Shiner and the staff, are going to do a great job, and they're going to tackle it certainly head on and provide you a series of recommendations, I'm sure. But, you know, I just, you know, that's why I want to go back and just kind of reiterate some of the things we've done before, because there are a lot of things that we've done to try to help the business community.
We did. A lot of, you know,
I completely agree with you.
But
we and yet we have this business who's, you know, asking for additional support, right? So does that mean there are other businesses as well? Did we get more I apologize, but did we get other items from the EDC that we could work on?
Well, and again, to go back to the liquor part of it, not to beat a dead horse, but they're not using it. So part of the issue is the business owner coming back and saying, I paid for this. and I didn't, the restaurant wasn't open because I couldn't open the restaurant. So I'm still selling packaged liquor, but, you know, I can't have people come in. So as we're looking, can I have some consideration? And so that's what we're really talking about right now. Yeah, the EDC has discussions about that on an ongoing basis. One of the members of the EDC is a small business owner. So in that regard, we didn't have any specifically at the last meeting, but those discussions took place at the November meeting. And that's, you know, the chamber was there. We talked about the continued of the advertising, things of that nature, and we've done that.
So if we moved it to a partial fee rebate, because it would be partial, right?
Yes.
Versus a waiver, and that would be for 20, the rebate would go back to 2020, right?
Correct. That would be acceptable.
Right.
And it would achieve the same thing in terms of the dollars and cents.
Right.
Yeah.
So, did that work with you, Katie? I think you moved it, right?
Right.
And Rez seconded it. Katie,
yeah.
Would you be fine with saying to approve a partial fee rebate versus waiver?
Yes, although I heard something in what Bob said. Maybe you may or may not have meant this, Bob. I don't know if the term rebate, maybe a refund? Is it, Greg, is the term rebate, is that like a legal term that you have to be careful of?
Yeah, I would prefer rebate because this can be used, it can be made under the village's general economic development authority. So I think a rebate is more appropriate than a refund.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm fine with that.
Okay, great. And Rev, are you okay?
I'm fine with that. And just adding to this conversation, I'm okay. I'm okay with any business coming to us, asking us for a rebate. It's like any other, I consider that like someone who's coming in for a zoning variance or whatever, coming to us and saying, this is what I need. Can you give it to me? And then we can evaluate based on what circumstances or reasons they give us to make that decision. It's hard for us to come up with a criteria program, which I am hoping is only going to be short term meaning probably the next year. But if I don't want to automatically start giving things out if the businesses haven't even come to us. I'm sensitive to our businesses, just like I'm sensitive to our residents when we were, you know, delaying the fees or whatever, and we dealt with those issues as they came about. I just don't want to start prescribing things in advance or being so restrictive. And I do think in this situation, I can totally understand the person seeking the, well, previous waiver, now a rebate. And part of it, I mean, we've been talking about trying to help our businesses, and I understand we don't want to waive everything or give back everything, but I do think if they're coming to us, that means they have a problem or they're seeking help, and we ought to be responding accordingly. And we can decide that as they come to us for the request. So that's just my opinion for what it's worth.
They're all worth it. Okay. All right. So sounds like Katie and Rez are in favor of the new language, so I'll go ahead and get a vote on that new language.
Trustee Vasquez.
Yes.
Trustee Brennan.
Yes.
Trustee Hennick.
Yes.
Yes. Sorry, I didn't hear you.
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Motion passed.
Okay. Okay. Thanks. All right. So I think we need to move to executive session. So we're finished with our regular meeting, and we'll move to executive session.
Okay. I move to enter into an executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees of the village, and the setting of a price for sale or lease of property owned by the village.
Second. Do I need to roll call this?
Yes.
Yes.
Trustee Bachner?
Yes.
Trustee Vasquez?
Yes.
Trustee Brennan?
Yes.
Nick?
Yes.
Trustee O'Connell?
Yes.
Yeah, and the Village Board will be adjourning its meeting from the closed session Zoom. No further discussion or action will take place between the adjournment of executive session and the meeting as a whole.
That's correct.